I'm Richard Dillon, I'm chairing the meeting tonight. Thank you, Ginny. And this is Naila Ashraf from Manchester SWP. She's going to speak for roughly 20 minutes on what is Islamophobia and how do we fight it. Naila.
Okay, guys, thanks for having me. So, what is Islamophobia? Well, the term itself came about in 1991 or something, when Runnymede Trust did a report about the rise in racism against Muslims in particular. And basically, what is it? It's the idea that you're scared or you have a problem with people of a particular race, well, not race, religion, or what you see is their religious beliefs or what have you. And bottom line I would say about Islamophobia is I think it is now in society the probably the last acceptable form of racism. You see, there's, you know, in the last, 20, 30 years, there's been a really strong anti-racist movement in this tradition in this country. And we have pushed back and won massive ground against a racist. But I think Islamophobia is somehow seen as the exception. It's not racist because you're talking about Muslims, but it's not about the colour of their skin. They're not a race. It's about somehow their culture and their belief system. And that's all open for discussion. In fact, so open for discussion that it's not even, you know, the gutter press that talk about it. It's acceptable to have, you know, editorial columns in what would be seen as quite respectable left-wing papers, The Independent, The Guardian, and what have you, where they will discuss the way Muslim women dress. You know, this kind of, coming from a left perspective, you know, they would never talk about how women, or be seen to be talking about how women dress. You know, we've all got some equality, and you know, it's a woman's right to choose. But somehow, when it becomes a question about Muslim women, it's all open for debate. You know, somehow we don't have the same. And in fact, I've been told that it's for my own empowerment when they criticise the way I dress, because I can't possibly choose to dress like this, and I can't possibly, you know, have an opinion about the way I'm dressed because I'm a submissive Muslim woman, as you can tell, and anyone that knows me. and so, you know, it is racism, but it is somehow within British society become acceptable through the onslaught, I would say, from the media, but also the onslaught from the government. You know, when you have minister after minister, you have, you know, the Prime Minister Cameron himself coming out with vicious stuff. You know, the idea of multiculturalism has failed, that, you know, we need to talk about, we need to have a discussion about Muslim women that don't speak English. You know, we're going to do English tests, and if their English isn't good enough, we're going to deport them. Well, I'd like to know where, too. You know, what is this perception, and what the narrative that he's setting is that Muslims are inherently not British, that somehow they're the other. And I think in some ways they've really managed to set that agenda of the othering of the Muslim community, and therefore we're open for discussion. It's okay to have this discussion. And actually it's not just in Britain. You're seeing the rise across Europe with the rise of far-right parties, but also in the US. You know, Donald Trump thinks it's okay to talk about Muslims, about banning all Muslims. And in fact, it wasn't so long ago where you had some writer, and I can't remember his name now, in Britain, who had a front page article in The Guardian talking about, well, they must suffer until they get their house in order. They must not be allowed to travel. They must be banned on planes and stuff. And, you know, you think about this, and you think, when was the last time someone spoke about a group of people in that way? The collective punishment. It was a Jewish community in the 30s. That's really what it was about. You know, when somebody did, and I think it was Terry Eagleston who wrote an open letter to him, not so after, somebody here must know the name of this author, I can't remember, it wasn't very good one. Yes, horrible. Article he wrote. Anyway, and Martin Amos. Oh. And actually, Terry Eagleston came back on him and said, you know, it's unacceptable. And his response was, well, I was scared. I'd been on holiday with my family, and I felt that fear for my family. And he said this about 10 years ago. And actually, what you're seeing now is people are actually being removed off planes because they look suspicious. You know, someone's on his phone, or someone looked funny in a funny way to the staff on the plane, and you're getting people removed. You're getting people, families that don't look quite right. I'm not sure what that means. What, you know, the mum was wearing a hijab, or they were black, but they were taken off a plane and not being allowed to go fly to Disneyland or wherever it was they were going to. And this is the thing that you're seeing across the board. And it's not just, unfortunately, not just the Tory government. I think you saw this very early on with the Labour government, where they attacked Muslims, and in particular, interestingly enough, Muslim women. And I think they used that narrative to justify their illegal wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So who can forget the fact that, you know, it was, you know, they came out and tried to tell us that they were going to war to free the women of Afghanistan from the Taliban. I'm not quite sure how much freedom is involved by dropping bombs, smart bombs, from the air to protect these women. I mean, they talk about smart bombs, but they're not so smart that you can identify who are the oppressed women and who are the Taliban from that, you know, height. But there you go. And I remember, it was shocking, wasn't it? So we had, was it Bush Senior's wife came out alongside Sherry Blair, and they did this whole thing about it's for the sisters. And he's just saying, it's absolutely, and it's interesting that they package up this kind of liberal left-wing thinking and try to feed it back to us. And what it actually means is you've got a situation in France where actually it was the left that pushed the agenda forward about Muslim women and Muslim girls not wearing the hijab in school. And actually, what did that do? What was the consequences of that action? Rather than empowering those young Muslim women, they were more isolated than ever. You know, at a time when they needed solidarity, they were pushed out. And I think, you know, you look across what's happening in Europe, and I do think that the situation in Britain is far better around Islamophobia. It's not as intense as you see around Europe. We've got situations in Europe where in some countries there's a ban on praying in public, there's a ban on wearing the scarf that I'm wearing today in public places, in, you know, council buildings, universities, that kind of stuff. There's a ban on, you know, building minarets, building mosques. I mean, this is how shocking it's become. And it's become acceptable. And I think what's interesting in Britain, though, that we haven't seen the onslaught to the extent it is. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think it's particularly bad, but it's nowhere near as vicious as what's happened across Europe. And it's interesting, and why is that? Now, some people would like to say, I mean, it's interesting, I went to a meeting and someone said from the platform, oh, it's not in the DNA for British people to be racist. And you just think... You know, it's almost as bad as when they say, oh, well, it's because we play, you know, we drink tea and we play cricket. Can I just say, that's bollocks. Now, there are, you know, there is another thing, though, isn't there? People sort of explain why there is racism. And some people say, you know what, we've always had it. Yeah. You know, it's just inherent in society. It's just natural to be racist. Or the other argument is, it's just people have bad ideas. And actually, I don't think that's true. We haven't always had racism. I think what we're seeing with Islamophobia is a trend that we've seen for a long time, and this is just a new form of racism. But actually, we haven't always had racism. You know, racism is very much connected to capitalism. Before we had the class society, we didn't have racism. You know, I think it was the onslaught of the slave trade that created racism. Some people would argue that it was racism that it allowed the slave trade to take place, but that's not true. You know, before we got the mass slave trade in the US and the plantation owners and all the rest of it, there were slaves in Greece and ancient Greece and Roman times and stuff. But actually, it wasn't based on the colour of your skin. It was only the capitalist class who had to use the idea of racism and say that actually, because it was so horrific, the slave trade was so horrific and at such a mass scale that they justified it by saying, well, they're subhuman. You know, they're not equivalent to us. The colour of their skin makes them different. And actually, from there, you've got that kind of, we hear a lot about, or used to hear a lot about, this idea of the white man's burden. Somehow they're going around the world. And we got it a lot from Britain, didn't we? We went around the world colonising whole parts of the world. And it was all about the white man's burden. We're going out to, you know, civilise people. You know, we're doing it on, you know, that's not how I see our history. You know, I would see it very much as a butcher's apron, all the rest of it. But that was a narrative that they set. And it was a narrative that set to push their ideas. And, and you know, the slave trade really did see, you saw the rise of racism through that, the kind of push for the need for labour, for profit. That's what it was about. That's what the slave trade was about.
Exactly.
But really, what's happening now? Why have we got this massive onslaught against the Muslim community? And it's interesting, I hear a lot of people will say to me, well, you know, it's because of the foreign wars. You know, that's what's encouraging the attack on Muslims. And I think that's right. You know, we're seeing presently, we've got what we call the prevent agenda, which is, for those of you that know, that every public sector worker now has to, there is legislation that means that they have to, as part of their roles as public sector workers, as providing a service to people, they have to look out for people that could be potential at threat of being radicalised in the future. Mm. Not you're radicalised now, not that you've seen something and you think, that's a terrorist act. You're not planning anything, but you could be radicalised in the future. This is how severe the situation is now. And the Prevent Agenda came out under the Labour government. And I think at that time it did come out to try to divide and create, you know, divisions within the anti-war movement. We had a massive anti-war movement, real solidarity in the streets of Britain, far more than you've seen anywhere across Europe. You see, you know, what happened in France, where, you know, the anti-war movement didn't stand with the Muslims, and there wasn't that solidarity that we argued for in Britain. And I think quite rightly, that argument that we won in Britain by taking the streets with, you know, setting up an organisation called Stop the War with the Muslim Association of Britain, with CND and with, you know, Stop the War, it was a real, I think, a turning point in British politics. And I think it defined a generation because it helped build that solidarity. But I think at the time, the Labour Party brought out that legislation. It was very soft. It was about, you know, we're going to fund groups within the Muslim community to counter extremist behaviour. You know, they even did things like funding knitting groups. But on the back of funding knitting groups, you had to send in details of all the people that were at part of your group so we could monitor what they're doing. And that's really what it was. Yeah, knitting. And what you ended up happening during the early stages of the anti-war movement, you had lots of arrests taking place in places like, you know, the outskirts of Greater Manchester, in some of those smaller towns, where you got mass arrests and nothing ever happened. Who can remember the convoys going to Gaza, getting stopped and people arrested and, you know, under the extremism stuff, and there was never anything. They were all, you know, freed, and never, no one ever heard about the fact they're all freed without charge. But people do think a lot of the results of that was coming from, at the time, what was Prevent, you know, what are people doing, give names of these organisations and individuals organising, well, from what I could see was charity work, but they were organising, it was a threat to the Muslim, to the government, the power that be's at the time. But that's massively shifted now, to the extent that actually it's not just the Muslim community that were being targeted as it was in the Labour government. Now it's every public sector worker is being told that they have to, as part of their job, and if they don't do this, they will be held responsible and could be prosecuted for not reporting something. So that's why we have a situation where you've got young children in primary school being reported for using the word terrorist instead of the word terrorist house. He said terrorist house. And rather than sitting down and saying, well, you know, would you like me to tell you how to spell that word? The police get involved and the whole family get investigated. I mean, this is what's happening.
Yes.
And you've got students at universities who are going into the library, in the library at the university campus, taking out a book as part of their reading list for their masters, sitting in the library, reading the book openly and being reported to the police because they're Muslim and they're reading a book about counterterrorism and it could be a threat. And really, you know, you almost want to laugh at it if it wasn't so scary. Because while they taught and criticised the Muslim community for not being so-called integrated and what have you, and I, by the way, I think the Muslim community are far more integrated, part of the working class, than the Tories will ever be with their nice, you know, thatched cottages and, you know, in the south of whatever, London and the outskirts of London. So the idea that they, the Tories, would criticise as they were having cabinet built on, you know, millionaires, the idea that they're any more integrated, it's just a joke. The idea that we're being lectured by these bunch of Etonian billionaires, you know, is an absolute joke. But that's what happened. You know, they are now saying that every public sector has to do this. And it's got to a stage where there are people, you know, people say, is this as bad as the stop and search, the sus laws and stuff? And I actually think it's far worse. Because you see, I growing up from a Asian background, I remember my mother saying to my brothers, you know, I don't want you going down that road. I don't want you hanging out with a group of lads. I don't want you driving in cars with groups of lads because you're going to get stopped by the police. But you're saying that to people in their late teens and you can have a conversation. How do you say to a kid in nursery, I don't want you to say something in school? I've got friends saying to me, I'm terrified my child is going to say something in the playground. I've got women saying, do you think the best thing to do is actually, you know, do homeschooling? The very arguments that they're trying to say, we're bringing this out to help the Muslim community. It's the very thing that's pushing the Muslim community to be isolated. I mean, it's shocking, the attack on the Muslim community. And why are we seeing that? And you know, I do have people that say to me it's because of wars, but you see, I don't agree at this stage. I don't think it's just about the foreign wars. Because when you think about how much the Tory government has ratcheted up the prevent agenda, it's not, you know, their foreign interventions, their wars, are not on the same level. Don't get me wrong, we are at war with plenty of countries, and I don't think we should be. And if we're not directly at war with them, we're funding or we're supporting organized, you know, governments like the Saudis to bomb Yemen and all the rest of it, and selling weapons to anybody that will buy it from us, as long as it makes profit for the arms industry. But I don't believe it's just about what we're doing with our foreign wars, our foreign policy. I think it's a bit more closer to home. And I think it's about, yes, you're attacking the Muslim community, but I think it's also weakening the working class, because it's dividing workers. Public sector workers, at a time when we're at the forefront of the attacks around austerity, they are putting another thing, they're pushing another thing onto public sector workers. And what they're doing is saying, actually, you're not just public sector workers, you're not just delivering a service, you're an extension of the police force. You're part of helping us criminalise the Muslim community. And that very trust that we need in the working class is being broken at a time when we need to be standing together more than ever. Because you see, you're not just having to spy on the service users. You're not just, you know, if you're a social worker and you're trying to build trust with the family you're working with, well, how do you think that family's going to feel when they think, well, wait a minute, you're coming into my home, but you've also been trained up on prevent? Yeah. I mean, that's the situation we're at. But you see, so at a very time when public sector workers and I think the service users need to stand together and fight against the austerity, I think it's being smashed. And what's really interesting, that the government's line and narrative is very much the biggest threat to British values, whatever those British values are. And I'm pretty sure they're not the same as what the Tories would talk about British values. I would think in this room our British values are very different. But at the very time when the working class needs to stand together,
yeah,
the government and the media are setting a narrative that actually the biggest threat to British life and to the working class is Muslims. You know, it is, that's what they say. But actually, if you speak to every public sector worker, I think they would say that the biggest threat to the British way of life is the attacks on the welfare state.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that, and I think that's why the attack on the Muslim community, because you see, racism has always been used to divide us, divide and rule. And actually, this is just another form of that. In another time, it's today, it's the Muslims, it's been the Jews, it's been the Irish, it's been whichever community. Even when you've got small pockets of Italian community, they go for that. But today, it's the Muslims. And yes, you know, it was about the foreign wars, but it seems quite natural to continue that. When you think about the threats, you know, we've always argued that if you go to war abroad, you're going to bring terrorism to this country. And actually, when they talk about the Muslims and it's a problem about Muslim ideology, or it's about the fact that, you know, you've got Muslim extremists, it's about their mothers or the women in that community not being able to speak English well enough, what does it do? It gets them completely off the hook about what they're doing. And that's, I think, the narrative around Islamophobia, and I think the onslaught to the Muslim community is about that. But I do think it's an onslaught not just on the Muslim community. I think prevent is an attack on the public sector workers. I think it's an attack on the welfare state and what the welfare state is there for, because it is being extended as a police force to criminalise a whole section of our community. But you see, I'm quite confident that they're not going to win with that. Because unlike their lack of integration, see, I think the Muslim community in Britain is very integrated. We're a section of the working class. You know, Muslims up and down this country work within in the welfare state. They're public sector workers. And they're part of unions. And I think that's what gives me the confidence that we can push this. And already we saw the NUT, you know, at conference and voting to, you know, push the agenda prevent. We've seen the UCU come out with statements. We've seen the NUS, you know, launch their campaign, Students Not Suspects. All this stuff is fantastic. And on the back of all of that stuff, you've actually got the Muslim community who have actually been quite cowed by what's been going on in the last 3 or 4 years. You know, you speak to lots of people in the Muslim community and they'll almost say, oh God, I can't watch the news anymore. Can't pick up a newspaper because it's always a story. And it sounds horrendous every time you hear about something, you think, oh God, please don't let it be a Muslim. That's the state of the situation that people are dealing with. But actually, even they, not so long ago, put out a statement, particularly from the Northwest, lots of names from the Northwest, basically saying, the government has said we're going to send Ofsted into you know, out of hours schools, so you know, this madrasas and stuff. And at which point they put a statement together and they stood up. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. And I think we need to be looking at that statement and the organisations that put their names to it. And we should be talking to them. Because actually, I mean, I spoke to them and I said, I've been talking to you for about 2 years on Prevent. What made you put that out? And they said, we just didn't think it would get this bad. It can't get any worse. We just have to do it. And I think, you know, we do need to work with the Muslim community. And I think we've had a good tradition of doing that. But I think we need to continue that tradition. And, you know, how do we push Islamophobia back? I think there's two approaches. One is obviously we've got to build the anti-austerity movement. We've got to give confidence to the class to put the blame where it is, not the Muslims, but actually the bankers and the Tories. You know, if they made all these big companies pay their taxes, we wouldn't have to have the austerity. If all those people with, you know, offshore bank accounts and all the rest of it, if they just pay their taxes, we'd be a good way to solving the problem. But so it is about building the austerity. But I think the only way you can build the austerity, the anti-austerity campaigns, and really build confidence is actually to build an anti-racist campaign alongside it. Because that those are the two things that have to go hand in hand. I don't think you can talk about racism without talking about austerity. And I don't think you can talk about austerity without talking about racism. So I think we have a real job to do. And the key job, and it is about building what we call a united front. It's a it's Trotsky's idea of a united front where you work with people that would traditionally on the right of you, and you agree on a key principle, in this case, being anti-racist. And that's what you focus on. Because you can say, oh, I'm not going to work with people until they agree on everything. Well, you can just sit at home and be on your own and isolated and be a little cut. But actually, we need to build a mass movement about racism. And I think that's where the party has a very good tradition of doing it. We've done it around UAF. And I think when you think about what we're doing around Stand Up to Racism, we're winning some of the arguments. You know, when you saw the attack on the refugees, it's absolutely appalling. But actually, the government has to keep shifting. You know, they first said they wouldn't take any refugees, and then it would say, we'll take 20,000. That's nowhere near enough. And we're going to keep the pressure on. But they had to take that U-turn because we pushed. Then they said, you know, we're not going to take any children. You know, the 3,000 student children, unaccompanied children in Calais. Now they're saying, well, we'll do it. Even before the second vote went in with the amendment, he's already backtracked. Now, we haven't got everything we want, but we're getting some shift. And I think when they say the figure of 1 in 3 people in this country have given to refugees, that's amazing. When you think about the onslaught that the government has had against the refugees, and I think to an extent they've been able to do that because of their connection with Islamophobia in this country, because actually those refugees are black and they are predominantly from Muslim countries that we just happen to be bombing. You know, and that's why I've heard that it be said, well, you know, those refugees, they could be coming over here and they could be terrorists. Well, I don't know the last time some terrorists made that journey with their family, almost dying in the Mediterranean. Because the only terrorists I know had expensive, you know, planes that were flown into big buildings that were funded by Saudi Arabia, our very friends that we still sell weapons to. So, you know, this idea, but that's a narrative. Yeah. And at the same time, they say, the other narrative is really important as well, when they say, oh, but, you know, they're not got British values, they're not like us. What do you mean they're not like us? Oh, you know, you've got sex attacks in Greece, in Germany. Yeah, they're homophobic. And what have we done to counter that? I think the thing we did to counter that is we set up the LGBT support refugees. I think that's a really, really important initiative. As part of Stand Up to Racism, we put out a clear statement. I mean, I don't know whether people saw the statement that came out from that group, but I think it's one of the best statements I've seen in support of the Muslim community. And, you know, I said, I saw some of the comments and I said, well done, because it was just what we needed after the Trevor Phillips programme. And I think it's interesting that programme happened and it was Trevor Phillips that headed it up. You know, a black man heading up an attack on the Muslim community. It was just a joke. But somehow it gives it credibility because it's a black man doing it. What's interesting is most people saw through it. So I think, you know, you've got to look at that. And I think it's amazing how this, you know, the LGBT, the Muslims don't support. Well, when the hell did the Tories support the LGBT community? I mean, it's such a joke, isn't it? And now you see the work around anti-Semitism. And the Labour Party are anti-Semitic. And that's why Muslims support him, you know, Sadiq Khan. I mean, I think in some way Sadiq Khan opened the doors to the attack on the Labour Party around anti-Semitism. You know, he was the first one to come out publicly during his campaign and say, well, I don't support the BDS campaign. It's like, what? He was the one who said, oh, you know, maybe we need to think about the way women dress in London. And I think because he's given so much, he's opened the door to the attack. And it is this thing about that's why he's doing so well. You know, it is because he's a Muslim and anti-Semitic, and Muslims are anti-Semitic. and it's just a joke. But actually, it is an attack on the movement. It is true that one of the campaigns that Muslims are so involved in is your campaign in support of Palestine. And that's where they are most comfortable. And now they're being attacked on their own, you know, this thing that they do feel comfortable and able to come out with. Because so I think it is a lot easier for the Muslim community to come out and campaign about something that's happening in Palestine than it is about coming out just because they're so up against it here. Because actually they come out and campaign against the attacks from the Tories. It's like, well, you know, you haven't got British values because you're... Because that is one of the things that the Prevent Training lists. You know, if you speak up against the government, you haven't got British values, you're not supporting British values, and you need to be pulled in. So I think, you know, for us, it is a two-pronged approach. It is to build the biggest, strongest anti-austerity campaign against the Tories and their attacks. But at the same time, hand in hand, I think you have to build the anti-racist movement. And I think, you know, one of the best things about what we're doing is the Calais delegation on the 18th of June. Now, for people that don't know, Stand Up to Racism and organise that delegation as part of a number of delegations they've done, and have basically, as an organisation, been leading the way in support and solidarity about refugees. And I don't think it's an easy argument to be had. It's getting easier, but it's something that we've led. However, I think we've won an argument in the movement, because now there's lots of organisations that come on the back of it. And I think that's something we should be pleased with. I mean, I think we need to fight for our space within it still and shape it, don't get me wrong. But I think actually we should celebrate the fact that all those organisations have got on board, because it means we've won an argument within the left itself, because people don't think it's an easy argument. And I think, as the SWP, we've always said, rightly so, that if you agree with us on the refugee issue, you're very close to us, and you're halfway or a quarter of the way there. And actually, I think, especially in Manchester, we've proved it. We recruited better over the refugee issue than we have on anything else. You know, we were lucky enough to the Tory Party conference in Manchester, and we had a great mobilisation for the People's Assembly and all sorts of campaigns and events for the week. But actually, activists were going in that room saying, well, what are we doing about the racism? And the People's Assembly went, oh, you know, it's about austerity, we're focusing on this and that. And actually, we just recruited loads of people because they saw Stand Up to Racism doing something. And I think that the argument that we've had is winning ground there, and we need to keep pushing it. You know, I was at an event in London, Trade Unions for Calais event, a couple of weekends ago, and Natalie Bennett, who's, you know, wouldn't be the most left-wing, most radical person, the closest to us, said, I think there's a new movement building in support of refugees in this country. And I think, you know, there's a new politics around. And I think it is true. When you say one in three people have helped, there are people, you know, Stand Up to Racism are doing some fantastic delegations to Calais, and so are a whole number of other organisations. But actually, people are just filling their car and driving on their own.
Yeah.
This is how passionate people feel about this. And I think people are making the connections between the refugees and how the Muslim community is being treated here. And they're seeing it as an attack. Because when they say we're all in it together, and actually we haven't got the money to let the refugees in, but hey, we're going to spend thousands of millions building that fence, you know, at a time when they're going to have an EU referendum and say, and you know, it's about, well, open borders, and that's why we want freedom of travel. And where's the freedom of travel for these people? That very institution, the EU, is what's shutting these people out and leaving them to horrendous situations where they're having to, you know, travel even more dangerous routes to escape these awful places that we're involved in. So I do want to say, for us, building the austerity movement is absolutely key alongside the anti-racism movement. But actually, alongside that, we have to build the party, because it's our politics that are running through all this thing. And I'm not just saying that because I want to, you know, on the back of let's just recruit. But actually, it's our political arguments that are winning. And the more people we have taking those arguments out into the class, I think the stronger we all are. And I would say that's my thing, is build the anti-austerity movement, build the anti-racist movement, and, you know, go out there and build the party. You know, this is what it's about. Now is the time.
Mm-hmm.